Welcome to Open Book. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Ed Decker, Artistic Director of New Conservatory Theater Center in San Francisco, former Director of ACT Young Conservatory, graduate of SF State, director, playwright. What's extraordinary about New Conservatory is that you have four stages. You started in 1981. When did you move into your current building on Van Ness?
We moved into the theater center in Christmas of 1985, and we took over the master lease at 25 Van Ness after the city and county of San Francisco purchased the building in 1991.
And at that point, you had how many stages?
Three stages, and we still have three stages. We have a studio that we sometimes use for classroom performances, but three stages for public performance.
And that was there from the beginning then?
That facility was retrofitted and outfitted back in 84, 85.
So you've been running a tremendous number of programs, shows over the years, and you've been with it since the inception, right?
Right. We produce between 25 and 30 projects every year, depending on whether it's our youth conservatory or our youth aware educational touring program, our cabaret series, our pride season, and our special events programs. It's always going. I think the only 2 days that we're closed there are, actually there's 3 days. There's Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's Day. But other than that, there's usually something always going on at New Conservatory Theater Center.
And it looks like 2, 4, 6, 8 shows per year, not counting the cabaret.
That's correct. And this year's Pride season actually has 10 shows. We added two bonus shows at the beginning of the season and at the end of the season. So we went from 8 to 10. When everybody else was cutting back, we thought, oh, let's just go the other way.
There's a tendency among people who know to think of New Conservatory as kind of gay theater. And if you look at the shows that you have next year, you have shows that are only very tangentially related to gay themes like Doubt, The Little Dog Laugh, and Master Class, and Dames at Sea as well. So how do you make these determinations? What are you looking for? Where is the audience? I mean, what are you now?
Oh, we're ever changing, Richard. For the past several years, I've been trying to expand the artistic vocabulary at the New Conservatory Theater Center, in particular with our Pride season. I think as the LGBT movement continues to grow, I think we've moved past the time of sort of isolating ourselves and separating ourselves out from sort of the rest of society. We needed to do that, I think, early in the 70s to sort of carve a place of distinction and say, hey, we're here and we needed to be visible. And I think that in order for the movement to continue to grow, I think it's important for people of all persuasions to realize that the LGBT and questioning community are part of every walk of life, part of all of our politics, part of every social structure that is woven throughout this country and around the world. And so trying to step away from ghettoizing the theater experience for a gay audience, if you please, and open up the, expand the vocabulary so that there's a lot more cross-pollination between cultures and classes and different people.
John Fisher last year over at Rhino did his own play Ishii, and the only thing gay about it was the playwright. Could you see something in a similar vein where the only thing gay might be the playwright, if anything?
You know, it's always possible, Richard. We do have a mission for the Pride season that the pieces have a connection to the community in some way or fashion. So what you're proposing is certainly possible. We work with a lot of gay playwrights and gay artists, and they're not always writing about quote-unquote, you know, LGBT things. So sure, I can conceive of that. For now, we're looking at themes in our material that do give some significant voice to the LGBT community, but also begin to give voice to inclusiveness for all communities. Now, you know, Dames at Sea, I wouldn't say is a gay musical, but, you know, it has a very, very fun gay sensibility about it. I mean, it's about showbiz in the 30s, and I just really felt like it was a good choice for the season and opening up the experience at New Conservatory Theater Center, especially in the Pride season, to other audiences. And then, of course, you mentioned Doubt. There's a big question in that. play that casts doubt, as the title aptly suggests, and I felt like that was certainly a strong candidate for our season. And of course, Masterclass, you know, Terrence McNally and I go way back, and I love to work with him, and I love to produce his work, and certainly opera, the grandness of opera, connects with the LGBT community as well as many other communities.
Doubt and Masterclass in particular require performers who rise above most of the other performers. Doubt, of course, not just because it was on Broadway with Cherry Jones, but also, of course, the film. And Masterclass, the actresses who have taken it on have been extraordinary. Have these been cast yet?
Doubt has actually been half cast. We started very early for that piece, and we're also going to be beginning casting for Masterclass after Labor Day. Both of those pieces are in the back half of our season. And it's very important to have the right choices in the cast for those particular plays. But one of the things that we're doing that I think is unique to New Conservatory about both of these pieces, Doubt and Masterclass, is that they're returning to the small, intimate theater, which is where they were created to begin with. I mean, they all went on to extreme success and played in much larger venues. But part of the experience that we want to bring to the audiences that may be familiar with both of these pieces is being in close proximity and experiencing them as they were originally conceived in a very small, intimate setting.
A show like Little Dog Laughed, I mean, how did you manage to get that one over, I don't know, ACT or even Berkeley Rep?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things at play when you're negotiating for rights to a property. And, you know, I suppose it didn't hurt that we had presented As Bees in Honey Drown in our last season, which was also written by Douglas Carter Bean, the author of A Little Dog Laughed. And Douglas came out to see that show and was very taken not only with our production but with the operation that we have at New Conservatory Theater Center. So I suppose having the author on your side didn't hurt us. But, you know, there were a lot of other plans for that piece. There was a national tour that was planned, and it got as far as Los Angeles, and I think due to the economy and commitments that some of the other stars had that were in the project in Los Angeles, it didn't continue on the national tour vein. So that also was a component that made it possible for us to earn the rights to do the San Francisco premiere.
And how did you manage to get the West Coast premiere of The New Century by Paul Rudnick?
Again, Paul is somebody that we've worked with in the past. We've presented his Most Fabulous Story a few seasons back. I directed his piece called Valhalla. So there's a relationship there. Sometimes that goes a long way, too, when you have a theater and directors or an artistic director that strongly believes in your work and provides some consistency of presentation, that you know that there's a venue that, as an author, as a playwright, that is there for you, especially on the, you know, in a major market like San Francisco.
The intimacy of the theaters is always helpful. I mean, the largest theater is how many seats?
It's about 130 seats.
And the second one is?
It's about 70, and the smallest one is only 49.
And that's the one where most of the cabaret occurs.
The summer cabaret series occurs mostly there.
Let's talk a little about the nature of casting, because this is a very, very big part of theater. And I asked you, are you the director of Beautiful Thing, which just recently cast? And you said no, but you were there for the casting sessions. First off, you know, you're a playwright and director, and you've got 10 shows coming up. How can you swing directing when you're busy being artistic director?
Well, you know, that's always a delicate balance, Richard. Luckily, I have a casting director at New Conservatory Theater Center on staff, Giovanni Loghi, and he sets into motion the process for bringing actors into the theater. And because we work with a lot of different directors, they are also part of that process. And I tend to come into the casting process towards the end of it, to be quite honest with you. There's usually a general call, and then we move into a stage one callback phase, and then we move into a final callback phase. And some place between the stage one callback and the final callback, I begin to participate, always participating in when the headshots and things are coming in, and working with directors in terms of calling people in, but actually being in on the auditions usually not till towards the end of the process. And you go to the theater a lot. Casting is everything. You really need to work hard to find the best folks for the roles. And we're blessed in San Francisco and the Bay Area to have an incredibly amazing talent pool. So if you cast early enough, that's the trick, because the good people book. And if you cast early enough, you can usually pull together the company that you need. And thankfully, actors like to work at New Conservatory Theater Center. So that's a help as well.
Recently, I read a memoir by Jean Renoir, the late French director, and he said for him, casting was everything. Once he cast his films, whatever they might be, that was it. That was kind of it. If it worked, it was because the casting worked.
That's a very accurate statement. I mean, I have been in situations where there has been a challenge in the casting, and you make choices all along the creative process. But I would agree with Renoir on that the casting is probably one of the biggest and most important choices to get right. You know, like anything, it's hard to be 100%, but when you get it right, the final product really displays that. And when you get it wrong, the same is true.
What happens? I mean, it's pretty hard to replace someone, particularly as you're nearing the date that's already written in stone.
Yes, and especially if you're in a small theater situation where you don't have a lot of extra resources to play with. I would say most of the time you just do your best to make it work. We've been very fortunate at New Conservatory. We haven't had any, you know, very dramatic missteps as far as casting is concerned. We have had the situation where somebody's had to step back from a project because of a family emergency or something of that nature. Especially with smaller theaters, you kind of have to then sort of put your resources at work and do the best you can with what you have, which is kind of the mantra of the small nonprofit theater anyway.
Let's talk for a second about this play, Beautiful Thing, which you said you directed 10 years ago.
Twice.
And it was a British film. You decide you're going to do it, and you begin getting resumes. Do you have people in mind when you sit down and pick out the play? Have you already talked to anyone? What is the first step in casting a play? Because, as I say, this happened over the past couple of weeks when you began doing the casting. What's the first step? How important is the audition if you kind of know someone already?
Often when I'm putting together the season, I do have the Bay Area talent pool in mind. Sometimes there will be a pre-casting notion in my head, but more often than not, even if somebody is thought of for a particular role, we may not drive them in for the general auditions, especially if they've worked at New Conservatory before. We would bring them into the callback phase. Since I'm not the only one that directs there, I produce everything, but I don't direct everything, and I think it's very important that each director that we work with have their voice in putting together their ensemble, because I've hired them to articulate a vision for the stage. So there's that. Beautiful Thing is unique in that of all the plays that we have done in this Pride season, now the Pride season is 15 years old, even though the organization is 28, this play is the number one requested play to return. And since it's 10 years since we've done the San Francisco premiere of it, I thought, okay, it's time to celebrate this play again. This season, I knew the director that I wanted, Andrew Nance, who was in the original production, as the boyfriend, Tony, and is my conservatory director. I knew that I wanted him to direct it, and he thankfully agreed. But other than that, it was a completely open call because, you know, the two stars are 17 or 18, the two boys, and the mother, and that family sort of had to be put together. And again, thankfully, we were able to bring together our casting director brought together a good group of people, and we just, night before last, finished casting it.
The people that you cast, why did you choose one over another? Anything that just kind of points and says, this is the reason I made this choice, or do you throw up your hands and go, God, I don't know?
You asked sort of earlier how important the audition itself is. It is terribly important. Folks have an edge that come to an audition that are familiar with the material on time and prepared For the role that they're auditioning for. That makes a big difference because that begins to sort of let you know what their work habits are going to be like. And then you have to sort of look at not only the individual characters, but balancing a cast out. You know, because sometimes, like, for example, in Beautiful Thing, the two leads are 17, 18 years old. So if you end up casting those roles a little bit older than a 17 or 18-year-old, then you have to make sure that the mother balances, you know, a believable age for the boys. And if the two boys are supposed to be 17, they need to look close enough to that age group and close enough to each other so that the audience is willing to suspend their disbelief if they're not really 17.
So if they're like 22 or 23, you're going to get a mother who's in her 50s as opposed to if they're actually 17, you could cast someone in their 40s.
Exactly. And so, you know, each play is unique in its casting needs, and you have to really take them one at a time. And we do a casting call for each particular production in our season, as well as for the youth programs. We used to do a general audition, but we've since just utilized the Theater Bay Area general auditions. They do those annually so that we can get an idea of who's new in the Bay Area, and then we do specific calls.
For a show like Masterclass, though, you kind of need a name, don't you?
You know, perhaps a name to the local community. What you really need is somebody with extreme skill. The piece, as written by Terrence McNally, is so beautifully crafted that it's really about the skill of the actor, who, especially the actress who plays the Maria Callas role. You know, they've done it with lots of big names have done this role and brilliantly. Our production is going to be, again, sort of a return to that intimacy, and perhaps the name will be familiar to Bay Area audiences, but I don't think Faye Dunaway is going to drop in.
Rita Moreno
or any of those wonderful people.
Yeah, I saw it with Rita Moreno.
Yeah, she was fantastic.
She was great. You're listening to an interview with Ed Decker, Artistic Director of New Conservatory Theater Center in San Francisco. You're also working on a play, or project, let's call it, called Rites of Passage. There's a blog online and through New Conservatory Theater website, and I read some of it. What brought you to working on this, and how can you actually put together a play where you're doing interviews for a play while you're busy artistic director? Again, it sounds like a little bit of a rough schedule for you.
Well, I've discovered that the play is going to take longer than I thought to create, Richard, because of the day-to-day work. I'm writing this with my partner, my life partner and husband, Robert Leone, who works in the field of international health. You asked about how this project got started. It was actually ignited by the gay marriage issue in this country. I began to look at our struggle for this particular civil right and equality. Very, very important. But I began to look at it in contrast to what was going on elsewhere in the world, what progress was being made in LGBT human rights. And we discovered that there are folks that are in very different places in the continuum of civil rights and human rights as far as our community is concerned. And there's some wonderful things to celebrate, but there are also some really horrific things that are going on as well. And we wanted to, again, expand the vision of LGBT human rights beyond just our USA perspective and perhaps add a piece to the puzzle that unites us on a more global level. It's a big project, Richard. You know, we've been traveling and researching for the last year and a half, and only recently have come up with our central storyline, which is going to be a way for us to tell a story that you can follow from beginning, middle to end while we cut away to different parts of the world where similar things might be going on.
So it's not a compendium like Laramie Project of different people telling their tales. It's one story with side trips?
You know, at the moment, but of course these things can change as the creative process unfolds. My partner and I have traveled extensively in Indonesia and have a real understanding of the culture there, and have decided that our central story is going to focus on a gay Hindu boy who, of course, grows up in this very ceremonial and theatrical society and has his challenges there. And as he faces his challenges, the play will, I don't know, stop action, if you will, of the central storyline, and we may take a side trip to a similar family situation in Africa, or perhaps a situation of violence in the Middle East, or in the isolation of the gay community in Central Europe. I mean, there's so many different directions that we can go, and it's been difficult to kind of narrow it in because you can't do everything. You know, this is the first play that I have ever written. I've helped countless writers at the theater develop their work. I have learned so much from them, and I'm trying to take what I've learned and try my hand at it. And Robert, my partner, who's a short story writer as well.
When a show plays, a new show, we're not talking about these revivals coming back, but a show either commissioned or sent over the transom, because I noticed that you do look at plays that are sent over the transom that just come in from people. You'll look at any play and make a decision or something, which is very rare, I mean, to be able to look at that. I would think that given where New Conservatory sits on, say, the hierarchy with Broadway at the top, you'd be interested in having any play go past you to the next level, in a sense.
Oh, certainly. And I think that one of the attractive things for playwrights about New Conservatory Theater Center is that it's 3,000 miles away from New York and Broadway. So there's a safe place to work and to, you know, explore, you know, your storytelling techniques and your characters and so forth. And it took me a while to learn that New Conservatory was attractive to writers in that way. For many years, I just saw the smallness of our venue, the capacity of our venue, as a obstacle. And when I realized that it was actually an advantage, things began to turn around and we began to work with some rather notable playwrights in the field.
Over the years, certainly you've had plays going back all of these years, what do you think are the greatest successes? I mean, when you've seen something, you've gone, my God, this is phenomenal. Can you think of anything that have just stood out?
Well, you know, in recent memory, we had a great experience with Alan Bennett's The History Boys. Again, it was nice to return that play to its smaller origins, and audiences really appreciated the proximity of the play. I remember being terrified going into rehearsals. I did direct that piece, and I thought, oh, my gosh, am I clever or clever enough to direct this play? There were so many references to great literature and poetry and art, and I remember staying up hours and hours into the night, you know, cramming to make sure I understood what the references were to, you know, certain battles in the war and certain visual artists. And, you know, when it all came down to learning all of that was very important to the project, but it was about learning and knowledge, and that was at the heart of the play and how we matriculate in life. And so once I figured that out, everybody was able to relax. So that was a particularly exciting piece for our audiences. We had a great success with Richard Greenberg's Take Me Out. I'm looking at another play of his for our next season. Beautiful Thing, you know, was an extraordinary experience. We did it twice 10 years ago because it was so popular. The commissions program that we have for our Youth Aware educational touring program is always very exciting because we bring socially relevant programs about HIV and anti-homophobia and substance abuse and class challenges for young people right into their communities. And we find those commissions to be really rewarding because they connect to young people and hopefully give them some opportunity to make some good choices for their futures.
At my end, I saw History Boys on Broadway, and then I saw your production. And, of course, there are comparisons that can be made in, you know, in terms of, obviously, production.
Sure.
But for me, what was most interesting was being able to see it in a different venue and performed in a different way without the film, for example. It comes across as a different play. The other side of it, though, is occasionally there are duds. Something called It's Murder, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this, and, I mean, I talked afterward with actors who weren't pleased with it either. What were your thoughts on it, and do you feel that it fulfilled what you were hoping it would fulfill?
Yes. It was part of our commissions program. We worked with two local playwrights, and the aim was to create a gay camp murder mystery that would play during our Pride Month, and it was very successful at the box office. Audiences really responded to it, but it's a certain style of theater that not everybody responds to, obviously, yourself included.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the great thing about art, in that it is always going to be a subjective experience. It's great when you have something, Richard, that everybody adores and wants to see more of. Sure, who wouldn't want, you know, unanimous approval? But I was very pleased with the results of It's Murder, Mary, especially at the box office.
Well, yeah, I mean, that really helps.
Yeah.
I've also been to a couple of the one-person shows that sit in the tiny theater, mm-hmm. and again, the quality is varying, but what I find fascinating is even when the quality is less than what one might hope, you're seeing new talent emerge. And I remember seeing something not long ago, and I was going, wow, I don't really like this, but this guy, he's interesting.
Sure, and you know, I'm glad that you brought that up, because one of the solo shows that we have, an artist that we've worked with is local actor Michael Phyllis, who just left this week to participate in the Fringe Festival with his piece called Dolls, which was developed at New Conservatory Theater Center. So our Emerging Artist Program, you know, is very important in nurturing talent for the future. And again, it's a subjective experience. You know, there's a lot of folks that just can't abide the one-person show, and so maybe they want to see something in our Emerging Artist Program that is a small cast project instead of a solo project. But the thing is that there are very few places where this kind of stuff can be nurtured and developed, as well as helping an artist find their legs and their voice and have a theater behind them that says, look, you know, you need to do your thing, and we're here to support you. And beyond helping the process along, you know, I don't, as an artistic director, I don't dictate the content of the piece. Obviously, I'm looking for something that I think would connect with our audience, Richard, but you know, if a playwright is coming on board, or if a solo artist is coming on board, the aim is to give them the opportunity to express their voice, not just sort of mirror something that I might have in my head or in my voice.
Well, one question I ask all the artistic directors, because I think this is very important. If theater is going to remain alive, it needs to be affordable. And a lot of people want to go to theater, but the fact is that these days in this economy, and even in good times, which were never really that good, people can't afford to spend $25-$30 or more for a play. Do you have any sliding scale, any way, or any specific performances that people can look at, even to fill out an audience where they can get in for free or for virtually free?
Mm-hmm. There are so many ways to get discount tickets to New Conservatory Theater Center and most of the theaters in the Bay Area. Gold Star is a very popular place that people go to. There's a lot of things on the web. The Tix booth down in Union Square, you can get half-price tickets. If you want to get a discount ticket for theater in the Bay Area, 9 times out of 10 you can do it. New Conservatory Theater Center, at least in the Pride season, we have on the first Thursday of every show, we have a pay-as-you-wish night. So folks can come, as the title suggests, pay as they wish. And that information is always available on our website as to when the particular dates are for each show. And our ticket prices, you know, range from, on the low end, $15, and on the high end, if you're coming to an opening night, around $38, but you get free food and booze with that ticket price. So, you know, you can't get a better deal than that. I think they're affordable to begin with. To make them even more affordable, there's a lot of discount opportunities out there, especially with the web.
And I noticed that by making the shows now at 8 p.m., I think they used to be earlier, people can actually park in the area.
Right. We experimented for a while with 7:30 shows and 7 o'clock shows, and the parking clears up between 6 and 7, so it's pretty easy. And we're lucky that we have public parking lots all around the facility, and we're only 2 blocks from the Civic Center BART station, and the Van Ness station is right at our door for Muni, so we're pretty lucky that way.
Let's run through these shows that you've got upcoming, okay?
Sure.
Good Boys and True, the author Roberto Aguirre Sacasa did an earlier show that was very good.
We produced Roberto's based on a totally true story a season or two ago, and Roberto is now one of the staff writers for the HBO show Big Love, so you can catch his work on HBO as well.
And this particular show, is this a comedy, a drama?
This is not a comedy. This is a drama about a high school senior at a prep school that makes a sex tape and lures a girl into a place to have sex with him and tapes it and shows his buddies, and it gets out into the world. And so there's consequences not only to him but his family and his future.
And then after that, you have The Little Dog Laughed. That's being directed by...
I'll be directing that.
You'll be directing that
piece. We're in rehearsal. When this airs, we will be in rehearsal. We open preview mid-September and open towards the end of September. And that's the Douglas Carter Bean play, the same author who did As Bees and Honey Drown that we did.
And then
season.
After That Beautiful Thing, and then Dames at Sea.
F. Alan Sawyer is directing Dames at Sea with G. Scott Lacey as musical director. And I've worked with Alan, and I went to school together at San Francisco State. He directed our production of Xana Don't last Christmas, and he also directs a lot for me in the cabaret series. He just did Connie Champagne's show that we had there, and he's doing a new show with Tom Orr called A Crass Act that will be on August and into September.
Then comes Doubt, and the only question I have there is...
You have doubts, Richard.
I have doubts. Well, I wonder, of all of the shows there... Why Doubt? I mean, it's just come out as a film.
Well, you know, I agonized about that because after I saw the film with Meryl Streep, I went, oh, you know, you'd be crazy to do this play. And then, of course, I saw the Broadway production with Cherry Jones. Again, returning this piece to an intimate setting, I think, is going to give a totally different experience. And there are some fine Bay Area actresses that can tackle these roles. And I think it's going to be a unique experience for folks, very different from the film and very different from the Broadway version or the larger regional theater production.
Do you have a director on that one yet?
I do. He's a young director. His name is Ben Randall.
And Sugar Witch is an original play?
It is written by a local author named Nathan Sanders. It is set in the swamps of Florida. It's a little bit about black magic and relationships. And that will be directed by Dennis Lichtig, another director that we've worked with a lot at New Conservatory Theater and Center.
Masterclass has a director as well?
It does have a director. My friend Arturo Catracala, who used to work for me many years ago as my operations manager and staff director, is coming back to direct that piece.
And on that one, as of right now, you don't have a leading lady.
We are in the process of casting that. I'll be very diplomatic about that because I want everybody that's coming to the auditions to understand that they have an absolutely fair shot, because they do.
Okay, and the final one, well, you've also got a couple of extras. One is South Pathetic, which is running through this weekend, which I saw was pretty funny. And the other, Boys Will Be Boys, which is a musical review. But the last show you've got scheduled is The New Century by Rudnick. Was that in New York at one point?
It was in New York. It played at the Lincoln Center. I think it was at the Mitzi Newhouse Theater for its run there. And it's a series of interconnected stories that Paul wrote that have a very unique take on LGBT life and politics in the United States. Very, very funny stuff.
You originally were the director of ACT's Young Conservatory. There's not much publicity about the classes and the youth classes that New Conservatory Theater does, but it's a tremendous list online. You do a lot of classes, a lot of work with young people. Are these well attended?
We just finished a record-breaking summer for us. Every class filled to the brim. The conservatory is very, very popular. Not only the classes that we have at our facility, but we also have a satellite program that's in schools throughout San Francisco. So we see about, 150 to 200 kids in our facility a year, and then the satellite program sees another 600 kids. Part of our mission there, Richard, is to make sure that arts stays as an experience for young people. And as you know, with all the budget cuts, schools have lost a lot of their programs, and so we're trying to step in and fill the gap by providing very low-cost programs, thanks to our underwriters, various local foundations that have stepped up to help us underwrite scholarships and pay for the costs of the of teachers and so forth, like the James Irvine Foundation and the Hewlett Foundation and the San Francisco Foundation. There's a really long list of the Haas Foundation, long list of supporters for those programs.
Do you sometimes work in tandem with ACT?
We share resources whenever, you know, we can. I think it's important in the theater community to be there for each other, especially now. At this point, we haven't done any joint productions together. Some of our teachers work there and some of their teachers work, you know, with us. So, sure, we help each other in ways that we can.
The theater community, I've noticed, is becoming, maybe it's always been that way, more collegial, or maybe it's always been collegial. I don't know.
My experience in the 28 years of San Francisco is it's always been pretty collegial. You know, the nonprofit arts scene in good times as well as more challenging times, you know, always has to be resourceful and supportive of one another. Sometimes it can be difficult, you know, if your seasons collide and somehow you've ended up with the same play in the same, you know, time frame. That happens rarely because most times the licensing agents are pretty good about keeping that all separate. But occasionally, you know, you probably have noticed yourself, you'll see, you know, it's like, why are there, you know, three productions of, I can't even think of a title right now at one time, but it can happen. It's happened to us with our three venues.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, there's a cross schedule issue and, oh my gosh, we've got two shows opening on the same night.
Well, how do you deal with two shows with the same intermission time?
Thankfully, our lobby is pretty, you know, pretty large and it can accommodate the visitors. In fact, sometimes we prefer the intermissions to be at the same time because then, you know, you have sort of people on the same schedule and you don't have a lot of noise going on in the lobby, even though our theaters are pretty soundproof. But if somebody wanders a little bit too close to the theater entrance, sometimes the sound can bleed in if they're chatting. And if you've got a dramatic moment going on inside, it can be a little bit disruptive. But you know, we've managed to figure out how to make that work. We have a bar there and a liquor license, and people just hang out during the intermission and relax until the show gets back up and running.
And for you, Ed Decker, you've got this one play this season, which is The Little Dog Laugh, that you're directing. Do you only direct one play per year?
No, usually I do two, one at the beginning of the season and one at the end. This last season, I did The History Boys at the beginning, and I did Terrence McNally's Some Men towards the end. But because I want to have a little more writing time, I've decided to only do one play this season so that I can get our Rites of Passage project moving along. Right now, it's scheduled for 2012-2013. It's already been pushed back a year. I wanted it to be done 2011, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Do you have any kind of acting bug?
No, you know, I got over that long ago. Long ago.
Did you ever perform?
Oh, sure. I did all of my training as an actor when I was at San Francisco State University, and I did Santa Rosa Summer Rep back in the 70s and learned my craft that way. And I think it's important for a director to understand what an actor's creative process is.
Why'd you lose the bug?
You know, I couldn't take the pain of the audition.
Really?
Yeah. I'm the kind of person that needs to feel a little bit more certain about my path, and so I figured, well, the producer and the director was about as certain as you were going to get in this business.
Frequently, a show is not quite ready when it opens. Do you recommend seeing a show toward the middle or end of a run if you can?
We have a longer preview process than most theaters since we do a lot of new work. But I also think, even with work that isn't new, that you need, you know, 7-8 performances to develop your rhythm as an ensemble. But, you know, the very last piece of the process is the relationship with the audience, where they laugh or don't, where the pitch of the play is keenest and where they're most engaged or less engaged. And you can't know that. I mean, plays are called plays because they're meant to be played and they're supposed to be enjoyable. So, and to enhance the enjoyment, it's very, very important, I've thought, to do the preview process. We used to do like one preview and then open the next night, and it was just terror because there was no way that an ensemble was going to be ready to incorporate all of that information and, you know, pay attention to the story, pay attention to their characters, pay attention to the tech, and deal with the audience. It's just not physically possible, in my opinion. I know it's done all the time, but at New Conservatory Theater Center, I've really moved away from that model, and we have 6 to 8 previews for all of our main stage shows, less for the cabarets and special events.
Well, Sharon Ott said that in terms of working comedy, sometimes it is best to see it later in a run, just because with comedy, it takes a little bit longer to get the timing down.
Sure, sure. I would agree with that. But hopefully by the time you get to your official opening, you have the bulk of that work done. And as you perform the show during all of your performances, you're continuing to, you know, hone it in. On the other hand, if you catch something at the end, they could be tired. So there you go. You have the other problem.
Playing through the weekend are two shows, South Pathetic, a one-man show with Jim David, and I believe...
Meg McKay's show is playing as well through the 22nd.
And then Good Boys and True has opened already.
No, it's in previews, and it will open on the 22nd.
And the website of New Conservatory?
Is nctcsf.org.
You've been listening to an interview with Ed Decker, the Artistic Director of New Conservatory Theater Center in San Francisco, which is located at
25 Van Ness at Market Street.
I'm Richard Walensky on Open Book.